Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
And I have now taken off my glad rags and I am back into my normal clothes because the Everton Gala dinner drew to a close and appeared to be a big success down at the Titanic Hotel in the Rum Warehouse. Alongside me for Mental Health Extra every week is Jake Mills. He was also there at the Do.
I was. How are you?
It was nice to see you there.
Yeah, it's good to share a table, you know. Socialising outside of work is always good, isn't it?
Do you want to do the beer story now?
No.
Or do you want to just sit on the beer story for some time?
I want to post. I'm going to post the video, which was essentially that. So there was a bucket in the middle of the table with some bottles of beer. So I got a bottle of beer out and I didn't know how to open it. So we looked around for the bottle opener and it seemed that the bottle opener was actually attached as part of the bucket. Which was next to you.
Yep.
So, being a good friend that you are, you offered to open that beer for me on the bucket. And you struggled a little bit with it because, you know, the angle wasn't right. And then we realised, well, I realised that the bottle of beer that I got, that I'd chosen, was actually upside down.
Oh, you knew that, right? Okay.
No, I didn't. I realised it. I realised it. Just as you got to open it a little bit and soaked not only you but Dave Prentice as well, who was sat next to you.
I'm gonna refer to him as veteran sports writer Dave Prentice, who didn't need to be sprayed with beer. I think it was Heineken Tuesday night.
No, and you weren't drinking.
That suit was dry clean. On I wasn't drinking. I was completely sober.
And you went home stinking of booze.
Yeah. Have you had a drink? My wife said, no, I haven't. Well, you stink of ale.
The best bit about it, and I'm going to post the video, is your face when it happens. Because your face when it happens isn't like, oh, no, I'm just so fed up. I knew something bad was going to happen. And I'm just so happy that I managed to get it at the perfect moment, just as you soak both you and Dave Prentice.
I just thought that is so typical that I would try and be professional, not drink, even though it was a free bar and it was on, you know, on the night and a nice place and a nice venue. And I got dressed up, but I thought, no, I'm working, I'm professional, I'm going to drive home. But Jake, you can have a drink, of course, because you've already been name checked by the actual charity for being here. You got a round of applause.
I was toasting it,
toasting it all over my arm. Oh, and so then I looked over and then he'd filmed it and he had that, you know, that smug look where someone goes, right. And I don't think it was exciting enough to be a You've Been Framed 250 quid.
No, but it was a nice moment to be able to capture. And also, I didn't tell you that. I just sent you it. And then I watched as you opened the text and opened the video.
He's on social media, Jake Mills 1. But it was a good night. Really enjoyed it as well. Is there a time frame in mind for the People's Place? They're obviously trying to raise it's a £1 million project as well, and it kind of falls in line with Everton moving to their stadium. But the People's Place, this mental health facility, is going to be a drop-on, but also house the ongoing work that Everton and the community are doing as well. It's kind of necessary now, but then it'll fall in line with the legacy for Goodison Park and the area once the new stadium move is on.
Yeah, but it's certainly planned for it to be in place before a stadium move. We do know that the fundraising campaign is for this season, and I think the plan and the hope is to be able to raise the money before the end of this season. And then as soon as the money is there, then it's all systems go in terms of actually getting a spade in the ground. You always try not to say that, don't you? But to getting a spade in the ground and actually getting it up there. And conversations and meetings are ongoing in terms of not only fundraising ideas to actually raise enough, but about the provision inside and what it's going to look like and how it's going to operate. So it's a very real thing.
Mental Health Extra from Radio City Talk, following on conversations we do as part of Mental Health Monday. That podcast available to download now. People who subscribe to that automatically get Mental Health Extra as well. Jay, I've got to mention the situation around reality TV. Because sometimes when you have deaths, people who are known within the celebrity world, if you like, and a suggestion that suicide is a factor, suddenly people look to go, well, it they were on a reality TV show, therefore there must be something wrong with reality TV, or they've taken this step and it must be because of something that I read about 3 weeks ago in the Daily Mail. And I'm always very wary of jumping 2 feet into that particular camp, because if somebody is lost to suicide, it can be a hugely complex series of scenarios which may have resulted in that situation, which probably were ongoing before an appearance in a high-profile event. It's more known about because they're a high-profile and people know them from social media and from TV. But this idea that, you know, reality TV is to blame for people's deaths, is that a bit of a leap too far at this particular stage?
I think it's a bit of a generic take on it, isn't it? As you said, everybody's individual, everybody's got their own issues and needs, and it could be that sometimes people are applying to go on a reality television programme to address those needs in the hope that maybe if they were to do that and get fame and, you know, maybe those problems that they're struggling with would vanish because fame is the thing that's helped them, and then it doesn't work and then might feel hopeless. What else have I got to do? It's so I mean, there's so many layers to people in general that we can't put it down to one thing or the other, especially when we're only speculating. But I do think that there are things that need to happen if people are in the limelight. And for me, it's about, and this is what we're trying to do anyway at Chasing the Stigma, and without trying to turn it round, but through our Ambassador Hope training program, what we're trying to do through that training program is enable people to make their own decisions about choices and help and support that's available to them. We know that according to the latest statistics, so in 2017, I might be slightly wrong here, but there's 5,821 recorded suicides in the UK, and almost three quarters of those were not known to mental health services or hadn't been seen in more than a year. People don't know how to access help or can't access their help, and whether that's because the threshold is high. But we know that it's because, as well, a major contributing factor is because that route to help and support is not commonly known. And it's about enabling people to know about the support that's available. So although television companies have a responsibility to say, here's support that we can offer as part of you being as part of the show, it's also letting people know about the other support that's around.
Yeah, and I think, because the other thing is, of course, if you're doing it for a TV show, you might do the equivalent of, you know, if you're going onto a building site, your hobnail boots and your hard hat. And actually, you might go, well, for this TV show, which is about being in this environment, this skill or this skill set that you're testing, then you can do psychological tests for that. But you also maybe don't necessarily know what else somebody's bringing to the table. You know, what's been going on in that person's life for the last 15 years, what's been, you know, what issues maybe are undealt with from childhood, whatever those things might be as well. But there's always a duty of care. Mm. There's a duty of care to everybody, but there's a duty of care to you and I going into work. There's a duty of care of everybody going into work. And that duty of care, we often think about it from a physical point of view, you know, about scaffolding and I say, you know, hard hats and health checks as well. But that idea of the mental side of things maybe isn't given as much prominence.
Yeah, no, definitely. And as I said, a lot of workplaces do have their own internal process. There might be even third party, say, counselling or support that they can offer as part of the workplace and being an employee, and it's part of the benefit. But what's really important is to be offering or making people aware of the support that's completely away from the workplace as well, because we know that the stigma that's attached to mental health, particularly in the workplace, prevents people from talking to colleagues or in some cases talking to a third party organisation, even though it's completely separate, because just that seed of doubt that might be in somebody's mind to think, well, if they're in contact with my workplace, that might come back to them or my employer. So it's about having that internal process, but also making people aware of the options that they can go and make themselves, because as you said, it might be something that's not even related to anything that anybody's aware of, but there will be support for that. And that's why we've got to be aware of those choices ourselves.
How comfortable are you when you see people who are friends of former contestants alongside people who may have appeared on a TV show or celebrities? lost to suicide, and then they end up on TV and people say, when was the last time you saw them? Did he suggest anything? Was there any clues, you know? Those are the sort of questions which anyone who's experienced suicide goes through in their own mind. And to have to go through that, I think, in a, you know, live national TV show, puts a great deal of pressure, because we know, don't we, there are vulnerabilities, huge vulnerabilities, to people who experience suicide close to them.
Yeah.
They become then high risk factors themselves when it comes to suicide as well. And this idea that people would go on as, you know, well, what did you know?
Mm-hmm.
Was there something you could have done? I just think that's hugely unhelpful.
It is, as you said, those who bereave by suicide, whether that's a family, a friend, or whatever, they are at a higher risk themselves. And it's almost accusing them to be like, well, was this your fault? Could you have done something? As you said, those thoughts are going through their head at the same time. You know, you don't need somebody to be pointing that out and guilt tripping them to say, well, are you responsible for this death? But again, I think so many times, particularly in the media and these type of interviews, people don't even realise that. They don't even realise that, well, maybe I'm being a bit kind, but I'd like to think that they don't even realise the danger and the damage that could be caused with questions like that, putting people in the spotlight. There was a comment that I seen from a contestant, which, you know, I'll kind of give a benefit of the doubt in being caught up in the moment, but I think it was just worth pointing out, where she said about she's mentally strong, and because she's got a strong head, she doesn't deal with this, but not everybody's as strong. And it's not, just to point out, it's not a case of being strong or not. If you're unwell, it doesn't matter how strong you are or what your mental attitude is. If you're unwell, you're unwell. So, I say, give benefit of the doubt, that kind of in shock and that, but it's just worth making that point that it doesn't matter how strong-willed you think you are, anybody can be affected by poor mental health, mental illness, and suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, it does make you think as well. We obviously saw a case from Keith from the Prodigy, mm-hmm, as well, which, you know, in terms of high profile, this was a guy who was, you know, number one selling artist as well, and known and loved right around the world as well. But a very different reaction, I think, to the news of his death as well. Absolutely tragic at the same time. There's always that short-term reaction, isn't there? Something needs to be done. So people are saying now, reality TV. Oh, we must do something about reality TV. Maybe people aren't saying the same thing about the music industry. For, mm-hmm, instance, we've lost Avicii, a prominent dance DJ this year. There's been many, many cases that we've seen in the world of music as well. The same people aren't calling for an outcry in regard to that as well. I think sometimes you have these responses. So, you know, reality TV is taking the hit now. Maybe it's a little bit of a different case because it's not based on a skill. You know, mm-hmm, you're not talking about somebody who's an artist or has got, you know, a music ability. You're talking about, you know, plucking people from nowhere, thrusting them into the spotlight and expecting them to be able to cope as well. But it smacks of, you know, well, something must be done about this. And then 3 weeks later, nothing
exactly
happened about it. And actually, we then started swallowing up the next series of the TV show. And we never gave a second thought to it. Or we didn't think, oh, well, I'm not going to watch that show anymore because I don't think they handled that particularly well. Or I won't buy from that record company again because I don't think they handled that particular situation very well. Instead, we go on to these reality TV shows and we start to hoover up the next one. And then the one after that, and the one after that.
Well, that's it, because there was somebody off Love Island who took her own life not long ago. And then it is just a case of the next one. Something has to be done, and how many times are we saying this and people are sad and shocked, and then it is just moving on to the next thing. But what I would say is that when Keith from Prodigy died and Mike died from Love Island, on those two dates we seen more than 7,000 people access the Hub of Hope. So people are obviously affected, but then are seeking help as well and looking for that help and support. That's what we need to be doing, is making people aware of that help and support that is available, because there is. And no matter what you're going through, no matter who you are, there's help available. And we just need that to be absolute second nature to everybody, to know where to turn. If one thing doesn't work, there's another option. There always is more options.
Jake Mills with us from Chasing the Stigma, the Hub of Hope, available to download. You can check that out as an app, also a website as well, and it uses your location to find mental health services close to you. Jake, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Mental Health Extra listeners now are going to get the story we brought you a little bit earlier on Liverpool Live from Vicky. Vicky explaining a situation she found herself in from an eating disorders point of view. It's an incredibly powerful story as well, and touches on some of the factors we've discussed on the programme about social media and social media's responsibilities to help with the mental health of young people. Vicky very bravely shares her story as well. And if you want to find services close to you, the Beat Eating Disorders website is beateatingdisorders.org.uk. You can also find services via the Hub of Hope as well. Vicky's story on Mental Health Extra.
I developed an eating disorder when I was 19, so I was in my last year of university. It wasn't straight away. It sort of, you know, developed over the years. I'd always been a bit sort of, it wasn't a full-blown eating disorder at the time, but from I was about 16, 17, it just started. And then I was diagnosed with full-blown anorexia at the age of 19. So my last year of uni, I knew what was happening, but you don't sort of think it's anything wrong. You think, oh, you know, it's normal. It's normal to feel the way I'm feeling or do the things that I'm doing, you know, not really telling anyone sort of thing. And then it's sort of when you start losing weight and people notice, like, oh my God, this is absolutely amazing. People are noticing, you know, you do feel absolutely fantastic, but you don't really think, you know, well, I never thought I'd ever get to the point that I did, sort of, after, you know, near death, basically. I wasn't actually in an inpatient. I had treatment, like an outpatient, but it was only because I was living at home. I was allowed to go home. So when I was assessed, when I had the initial assessment, you know, to be diagnosed, because I was with, like, my parents, my mum, she said, because I was living with her, I was allowed to go home. If I, you know, wasn't with her or was by myself, I would have had to, like, go into hospital as well.
So tell me exactly how, you don't have to tell me this, but, like, sort of what weight did you get down to? What was the point that you realised that this was really serious?
So I weighed myself, like, you know, quite a lot. So that was obviously a factor in, you know, just want to lose more and more and more and more and more. And then it just got to a point where I couldn't stand up. I could hardly, it was hard to speak, hard to think. You know, at the point, you don't really think there's anything wrong. You just think this is normal, and you sort of, it's like a spiral. I ended up where I was. I didn't, like, think, oh, this, I'm going to keep doing it. It just sort of happened. And then at that point where I couldn't walk, I couldn't hardly stand up, it took a lot of effort to just move about. That period of time, especially that time, it's very, very blurry. So, because it's been like a few years now, I've sort of overcome that bit. So I can't remember the exact type of feeling, but it's like a blur. It's just like an absolute blur of what happened, and then started to recover after it.
And do you think that social media had an impact on how you perceived yourself and your body image?
I say it was a factor, definitely, especially things like Instagram. Is probably, for me, it was the worst. Always, I was purposely looking at other models and what they were looking at and what I was at and what I looked like and how I felt like about myself. So I do think I sort of had a very low self-esteem anyway. And then from social media, that didn't really help, and it just added to everything, really.
Now, on your social media, you're quite open about the fact that people put on a facade. What sort of an impact do you think that has on people when they see sort of celebrities, like, you know, like we've seen before and afters, there are some celebs that will put up a picture and say, look, this is just an angle that I've taken out, but this is me in reality. But those are in the minority. People do sort of put the best version of themselves over it. What effect do you think that has on people?
I definitely think Instagram especially, that is, you know, you share a picture, you want to put the best out of yourself. Nobody wants to see a bad picture, but you may have a bad day. It's always the good, always positive, you know, always, oh, I'm looking my absolute best, I'm going to share this on Instagram or Facebook, things like that. I do see a lot on Twitter as well, especially girls. They, you know, say, oh, I just don't feel great about myself. I've seen pictures all the time of these models and, you know, there's no wonder I feel the way I do when they look like that and I sort of look like this, like, it's not real for them. So for, like, to see other girls, you know, saying, oh, look at that model, that's, like, the image that they want to get, really.
And I suppose it sort of makes it easier for people to compare themselves to other people as well by seeing all of this on social media.
Yeah, comparison is literally the worst thing you can do, to compare yourself to someone else. It will, well, for me it did as well. It can severely, you know, affect your mental health and how you feel about yourself. And I think for other people as well, it just doesn't really help.
So there's a couple of things floating about in the news today. So one is that a group of MPs is saying that to protect young people, social media addiction should be like classed as a disease, so that they should be limited on how much time they spend on it, and that it can lead to ill mental health. Would you agree with that?
I would say it can definitely lead to, especially kind of affect your mental health. I do think there's a lot of, I don't think people should spend a lot of time, as much time as they are spending on it now. I think they should reduce it at least, because it will make them feel a bit better to just stay off it for a few hours, just do something else, don't think about it, don't think what other people are doing, just like focus on themselves.
Absolutely. Now, another suggestion that's in the news today is about a tax on social media firms, so that that could then fund research into helping people with their mental health and with issues around these, so that it's almost as if they're giving something back, because it is those platforms that people are using. Do you think that's the right way, or do you think there should be more precautions in the first place?
I do definitely think there should be at least more precautions. I think just people need to be so careful, you know, especially if, you know, you're advertising something, or people are looking at what you're advertising, the message that they're sort of spreading, especially on social media.
Yeah. So what would you want to see change?
Especially for things like Instagram are doing, they are hiding certain hashtags so you can't, you know, look at it. For things, either for eating disorders or like mental health and things, they are restricting that, so you're not, there's not an open page to go and directly access that. So that's a good sign, at least. I think there just needs to be more of that, like more restrictions on what you can look at and what you can see.
Now there are calls for Ofcom to start overseeing what content is on feeds, potentially removing any content that's on there and tightening up regulation of it. Do you think that's a good idea for to have sort of a regulator of Instagram?
Yes, definitely. I do think it would help as well. Because I think a lot of celebrities anyway, they are, you know, sort of saying that, and you know, for someone else to look at that, it just won't help them at all.
So having been through it, what would your advice be to someone who is going on their Instagram and thinking, I need to lose weight, I want to look like this person, you know, they might have a celebrity in mind that they just aspire to be. What is your message to them?
Especially with Instagram, if you look at someone, you think, I want to look like them, they are probably have edited their picture, you know, or things like that. Don't compare yourself. You are, just be yourself. That's all you need to be. You don't need to be anyone else. You don't need to look like anyone else. Just be happy, just being yourself.
And I suppose having been there yourself, you heard people saying that to you. And like, was there a point where you suddenly sort of started to accept that? Do you remember like a kind of turnaround point, or was there a point where you suddenly thought, oh God, this is actually real, this is happening?
For me, I didn't really think, oh, you know, everyone's saying it, but, you know, you don't really believe it yourself, because you don't really, if you're, you know, if you think, oh, I'm so useless, I don't look pretty, I'm really ugly, and think you, for other people saying to you, well, you know, you are beautiful, you say, well, I'm not. I just think, because what happened with me, it just spiralled. When you are in the hole, you can't get out of it, you don't feel like you can get out of it. Some people, like, you know, they struggle for years, and they don't recover, you know, by themselves, you know, and it's just sad to see. It's so sad, because especially what happened to me, you know, when you are at that point of death, you sort of accept it. You think, this is just me. This is me now. That's my life. It's done. You know, you can't really think, oh, it's never going to get better. Nothing's ever going to happen again, sort of thing. You think, right, okay, it's fine. I've accepted it. And then when you do actually, well, for me, when I sort of recover, it sort of, you know, it, what happened, it's just not worth it. I just felt it's not worth putting myself through this, you know. But it wasn't just me as well. It hurt everyone around me, my family, friends. It's not just you, you know. It just affects a lot of people. Because as well, I obviously didn't just, you don't just lose weight. I just very nearly lost my life. And God, to even say that's so strange. And to be here, you don't really think you're going to get better. And then when you do, it's like, you know, why can't I just be normal like everyone else?
It's a massive, massive achievement. Like, this is overcoming, this is more than a degree, this is more than anything like that, isn't it? And that's the thing, it's the hardest thing that you've probably had to face in your life. And so to have come out the other side and now be saying, look, I've done it, other people can, you know, it's really important. With social media, did you sort of have a break from social media when you were recovering, or did you find that it wasn't helping you, or...?
I I did. I just, for me, I sort of, I didn't really look at the accounts that I was before, like extreme fitness and things like that. I sort of started to look at people that were recovering, you know, body positive accounts and things as well. And, you know, like motivational, and it sort of did, it did help me, especially like eating sort of recovery, like blogs and things and accounts. It sort of helped me to, still does, to be honest, it still does, you know, when you're having a really bad day as well, you're like, oh God, I don't, you know, you don't want to relapse or anything. And then you look at it, it's like, right, okay, just got to think, you know, and just carry on.
And so it does have a positive side to it as well. Yes. In social media, it's not all negative. Yeah. It? There are places that you can go to for help and like support and everything else.
Of course, yeah. I think, you know, if when you look for, when you find it, you know, I sort of just, I purposely looked for positive accounts and recovery. And I think that did help me. I stopped looking at, for my health as well, I stopped looking at all the ones I was before, you know, extreme diet, extreme exercise and for this long and things like that, yeah.
Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
If you are recovering from an eating disorder or you are struggling, please get help. It won't always be like this, and there is positive side. You will get through it. Even if you feel you never will, there is a point where you'll come to and you think, I want to get better. I want help. I want this for my life. I don't want to lose it.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
On Radio City Talk.